and I am pleased to introduce Sherry A. from Golden Valley, Arizona.
I'm an addict. My name is Sherry.
Sherry.
Whew, grateful to be clean and in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, because that's what this is. It saved my life. And the topic of walking the walk, it's so appropriate. Because I was thinking back and I was reflecting on my walk, right? I mean, no matter where you are in life, you're walking some walk. You're walking some walk, right? And wow. In the beginning of establishing who we are, you know, when we're young and we find our people, you know, we're walking that walk, and that progressed until, I'm just going to fast forward because I was that normal kid. I came from a normal family. We had no big deals going on. My dad was an addict. My mom was codependent. And for me, that was normal. And I don't think that had any effect on me. Maybe I'm wrong, whatever. But I believe I was an addict. I was born an addict. That's my belief. Doesn't have to be your belief. But I had a deal with a secret, you know. I started a secret when I was about 5 years old, you know. It was a secret that I carried as a child until I was like 11 or 12, right? And it just started me on my path of who I became. And, you know, that code of ethics that we acquire when we're in our active addiction, when we're in the grip, you know. I was in and out of jail, I can't tell you how many times, and, you know, I could be with, you know, who I was with. It was a lot worse, you know. I would be with the drug dealer, but I would be the one going to jail because I couldn't seem to pay fines, you know. I lost my license in about 1991 because I couldn't, you know, I wasn't going to pay the fine. I wasn't going to do this. I wasn't going to do that. I was just obstinate. And I moved from California to Bullhead City. And it was my second round in Bullhead City. And that's where my parents were. My mom was such a codependent. My dad was an addict. So, you know, I could just continue with whatever it was I was doing. I'd hit my first bottom in California on cocaine, and I discovered a means of using cocaine that was destroyed me. I mean, I looked in the mirror one morning and I said, "Who the hell are you?" And I knew that I was going to die. I was bruised. I was using the tools that farmers are not, that veterinarian people use, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, because we couldn't get the little stuff, you know, that people use today or that I got to use later. You know, I was in California and I was using with needles with like a 16 gauge shit, you know, and trying to do the deal, right? And man, I showed up in Bullhead City, Arizona, and I was tore up. And of course, my mom brought me in and put me on her couch, and you know, and I was done with cocaine because, you know, I just couldn't do it anymore. And there was no cocaine in Bullhead City anyway, so I moved on to the next thing, and I fell in love with meth. Right? Well, meth suited me just cool, right? Because I didn't have to get high every 5 minutes, and I could, you know, do the deal. So my career started with that, and it was what I ended my career on as well, 18 years later. And, you know, I countless times in jail, no license for the last 9 years of my using, and I rode a bicycle around Bullhead City. Well, Bullhead City, in case you don't know where Bullhead City is like, we're like 120 to 130 degrees in the summer. And when you don't have a driver's license and you're riding a bicycle, you know, I'm just not good, all right? And I was one of those addicts that always worked. I wasn't that person. I always worked. But all my money just went for drugs and gambling. I was on Bullhead City is on the river. It's a tri-state deal. You go 20, you know, miles that way, you're in Needles, California. You cross the river, you're in Laughlin, Nevada, and you know, over here you're in Bullhead City. And that was my, well, I never got to Needles, and I, you know, very rarely, you know, because I couldn't ride my bicycle. But you know, I was living in my parents, with my parents again, and I had given my son up to his dad when he was 12, and oh my God, don't you know, because I wasn't going to drag it, it was his turn. Well, bullshit, you know, I couldn't do what I was doing. He was 12 now, he wasn't becoming a, you know, a young man, like, he knew what time it was, and I couldn't do that anymore. So anyway, he went there, I came here, he was in California. I went years without even knowing where my kid was. And I was walking the walk, you know? You know, I hung out with motorcycle people and that really had a lot of attention by the police, right? And so when they would bust me, because I was an easy target, because I was always on foot or on a bicycle, you know, they would get me and I would be holding and I would go to jail and they would, you know, press me to you know, tell them what they wanted to know about the people that I hung out with. And I, no. And they say, are you stupid? You know, and I was like, no, you know, our code of ethics, that walk we walk. And I always just, you know, I always just did my time and got out and started over again, right? But I'm going to fast forward here to recovery. When I got here, that walk is not my walk anymore. I needed a new walk, right? And I was 42 years old, and I knew this one gal when I came in that had been doing this deal for 6 months that I walked. I watched her, and I watched her life turn around. I was still, you know, doing the deal, and but I was able, God put her right where I needed to see her all the time, and I was like, so like, okay, right on. But I wasn't done yet. I was not done. I want to tell you, I went through drug court. I want to tell you, I had 3 stints of probation. I want to tell you all this stuff, but I never changed shit. I kept doing what I was doing, staying one step ahead of them, become a new addiction for me, right? I would get a job at a casino, and stealing from them on a daily became a new addiction for me, right? I mean, that's the person that I became. So I had this little job at this little store, and this gal that I left and got clean, that I watched, she used to work with me. And we used to get high together, and she went into this recovery house, and she stayed there for a little while, and she got out, and she got a good job, and she, you know, she got a vehicle, and she was doing the deal, man. And I'm telling you what, she was shining. She was smiling. You know, she had changed. She had stinking changed right before my eyes. So I was on probation again at that time, and I had a probation officer that he didn't play. He did not play. And I mean, this guy would show up at my house in the middle of whatever. I mean, he was like, so needless to say, I had some problems. I kept, you know, not being able to slide through this one. Anyway, so we came, he put me in jail again. He says, okay, you're going to prison this time. You're going to prison. And he let me sit there for a couple of days, and I'm thinking, well, shit, man. You know, the county jail and me, we were okay. It was Camp Snoopy. I had my favorite cot, and you know, I could just get healthy and get back out, and it was a rerun. My life was like what is that movie, over and over and over. Yeah, you know, that was my life. I was empty inside and didn't even know it. I had nobody, I used to, I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but I used to think, nobody knows me. Nobody knows me. I know all kinds of people. I could go here and there. I lived in Bullhead City all these years. I mean, I knew people everywhere, and I used to take pride in that nobody knew me. Shit, man, I didn't even know me. That's what I didn't know. Me, did not even know me. I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know what I disliked. I just rolled. I rolled with whatever came down my way, right? You know, if it was another time to jail, if it was, you know, if it was testing shit that never been tested before, I was your person, I was the guinea pig, I would stick whatever. It didn't matter. I had no respect for me. I didn't care, obviously, but I didn't know that, right? So I get to recovery because I was going to go to prison if I did not do it this time, right? And so I got out of jail on September 24th, 1998, and my PO said, if you do it, that's it, man, you're going, you know, one more dirty, and okay, I'm getting out. And I was high before I got to Bullhead City from Kingman. And now I gotta hide. Now I gotta hide for 3 days, right? Because this guy's gonna get me, and this is it. This is the bottom line. But fear, you know, it just amazes me how the grip is so powerful that it doesn't matter that I didn't want to do it anymore. It didn't matter that I was going to go to prison. It didn't matter that I had no life, that I had been in and out of jail so many times that I couldn't even have a sheriff's card. And I wasn't even a felon because I always did this stinking of probation and got it, you know, knocked back down. And, you know, God gave me so many chances. So I hid for 3 days. I didn't get tested and I had an opportunity. So I looked up this gal that I've been watching for 6 months and I found out who I needed to talk to get into this house because I needed to be safe. And I knew I couldn't go back to my parents' house because, I mean, my parents, it wasn't happening. All right. So I meet this gal, comes and picks me up, right? And we go to Perkins and we're going to have a coffee date and she's going to talk to me and she's going to evaluate me to see if she can put me in this house, right? With these other recovering people. And, long story short, I had to stay clean for like 2 weeks before my bed was going to be available. And I was like, oh God. 2 weeks is going to be impossible, right? It's going to be impossible. And, you know, so I got my job back again. And so I was working, and I worked at this little store with a drive-thru, and I can't even tell you what that drive-thru was, you know. For years I worked there, and it was like not – anyway, you got the gist of things, and I'm thinking, oh my God, here I am, I'm back in my job with the drive-through, and you know, people knew me every, you know, and I don't know what happened, but God put this bubble over me, and it was like nobody came, nobody stinking came, and asked me to buy or sell, or you know, what was up. I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was the little time I was spent in jail that I was missing there or whatever, but God protected me. I discovered that later, that my God protected me. You know, I hear addicts say, I can't get clean where I used. I can't do it here. I got to go somewhere else. I said, you know, I don't know about you, but I did. I did. Bullhead City's a little stinking town, man. I mean, it's a lot bigger now, but back in the 80s or the 90s when I got clean, you know, I moved there. It doesn't make matter. I wouldn't want to go there, but whatever. I knew a lot of people. And so I'm working with this gal, and, you know, she was kind of an alcoholic, and, you know, she knew my struggles, and she knew what I was going through. She goes, okay, you know, don't pick up your dope. Right? If you you gotta do something, just have a drink. Just have a drink, right? Okay. Well, you know, alcohol wasn't a drug for me yet. And, I had 2 weeks, man. 2 stinking weeks I had to get into this house. And I really wanted it. Really, really, really wanted it. And, so needless to say, you know, I got out of jail on the 23rd. I got high. The 24th should have been my clean date. It wasn't. But I didn't realize that at that time, right? Because I drank, and then I got into the house, and fast forward, I spent 3 months there. I graduated from that place. And I was doing the deal. I was doing the deal, but now I'm walking the walk. I don't know what I'm doing. I have no clue what I'm doing. And now I'm going to get out of this house. I'm scared to death. It's 3 months later. And I've got a freaking stake. I got, you know, one of the things, I don't know if anybody else can relate to this, but when I was in active addiction, I had no structure in my life. I bounced. I was like that ping, you know, that, you know, the ping pong balls or whatever the hell they are. Yeah, you know, the games where the ball just bounces off of everything, you know. That's what I was, and that's what I did, and so I needed structure. When I went and moved to this house, they said, you got to be in by 6, you got to freaking go to bed at a certain time, you got to get up at a certain time, you got to be in a meeting at 7, you got to do all the chores, and you got to have these group meetings, and you got to field, you can't smoke, you know, and, you know, because when you smoke, it shuts down your feelings. I learned all this stuff, right? And when I moved into this place, there was these 6 gals that made me accountable. They said, you're late. I mean, I come home and I wasn't well still. And, you know, I was a little late. And they're all like standing at the door. And they're like, this doesn't fly. You're supposed to be here at 6 o'clock. It's now 7, whatever. And, you know, and I was thinking, wow. You know, this was the first time I've ever had to be accountable to somebody. And it was exactly what I needed, you know. But now I'm going to get out of this house in 3 months, and I'm doing the deal. I got a sponsor, and, you know, I was working steps and going to meetings, and I was going to both fellowships because I had to go to more than one meeting a day. And that's all Narcotics Anonymous had at that time. And, you know, in Bullhead City in the 90s, the men ran the fellowship. And I'm not saying that was a bad thing, because obviously it flourished, right? But the women were like, I don't know, we were kind of like, whatever, you know? We just showed up, and the men ran the show, and they had all this camaraderie going on, and, you know, they would share about, you know, what they were doing on the, you know, away from meetings, and I was like, so jealous, man. And I was like, what's wrong with us? You know, but we weren't stepping up into service. We weren't doing, that's what was wrong with us. We weren't doing the deal. The men were doing the deal, right? So I'm here to tell you, Narcotics Anonymous in Bullhead City today rocks. And the women rock it, right? We do. My home group is a women's meeting, has been for years. We meet on Monday night from 6 to 7:15. And, you know, we rock. The women have stepped up, and I am so proud of us. And the men are like so proud of us too. And it's so cool because we have a strong, strong fellowship in Narcotics Anonymous in Bullhead City. And I moved away in 06, and I moved to Golden Valley, and I was like in between Bullhead City and Kingman, and they're all part of my area. I belong to the Can area. And, we got Havasu, we got Needles, we got Laughlin, we got Kingman, we got everything in between. And so I thought, well, I'm going to try, well, Kingman's closer, right? So I'm going to try to go to Kingman and do that deal. I did that deal, but my heart was still in Bullhead City, so my home group is still in Bullhead City. I still make that commute. You know, for sometimes when I go to Bullhead City, it's a 50-mile trip for me sometimes. You know, but I don't care. Save my stinking life. I can't even tell you what I did in my addiction. I don't want to. You know. It doesn't matter. We have no boundaries. And so today I have no boundaries. You know, I don't go to 5 meetings a week like I did for the first 6 years of my recovery. My clean date is February 7th of 2000. I did not stay clean in 98. I went out after 15 months for 2 days, just about killed myself. So that is a story that we don't need to talk about. But the facts are that we don't do this thing perfectly all the time. We just do it to the best of our willingness today. You know, I had the same sponsor for over 20 years, and she passed away 2 years ago on Christmas Eve, and I thought I was going to fucking die, man. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? No. You know, she said she would never leave me. Have you ever had someone tell you that? I had never, ever had someone tell me that my whole life. When she agreed to sponsor me, she says, I will never leave you. Oh, and I, what? She's gone now. She's gone now, but she's not gone. She is so in here. She's in here right now. She, you know, she grew me up. She raised me. You guys raised me. And she was my mom, kind of, you know. She showed me how to do the deal. She told me how to walk the walk. She did not tell me. She showed me by leading, by example. And when I first got here and I looked at you guys and you guys were walking the walk, I was so jealous because I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to be honest. I didn't know how to talk to you. I didn't know. There was nothing. I felt I had nothing to say to you that you'd want to hear. Right? So when I would share briefly and, you know, over time, what happened was I came within myself. I worked my steps. I learned who the heck I was. I learned what I liked, what I didn't like. And I learned how to walk the walk. I learned that I needed to be in service. I needed to give back. I'm in service today. I'm so blessed to have the women in my life. Oh, and I got a new sponsor after my sponsor passed away, because I knew my sponsor, my one that passed away, was in my ear, and she says, you get somebody now. And so within the first week, I had asked someone to be my sponsor. And I didn't know this gal real well, and she wasn't from our area. She was kind of new to town, and I liked what she had, and I liked that I could be comfortable with her, but it wasn't the same. It was not the same, and I didn't know if we were going to make it. I didn't know, because, see, my old sponsor, she was so loving and caring, and she was like the kindest person in the whole world, right? And this gal here, she's kind too, don't get me wrong, but she's like that person. I mean, she's like, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but she wasn't like my Sue. And she made me chase it. She still does. Like, I knew I was doing this deal. I had 5 minutes, and I said, I gotta call her, right? She didn't answer. She didn't say an answer. I said, you know, she doesn't even have her voice on her voicemail. And so I was mad, right? And I was like, you know what? And I asked her that like months and months and months ago. You know, it would really be nice if you just put your voice on your voicemail instead of you reach blah, 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 blah. You know, and you know, because I said, you know, your voice would be really comforting for me right now. And, you know, And I hung up from a sponsee to go call her. And I could have talked to my sponsee, and it would have been the same cool thing, you know. But I knew that I needed to reach out to her. And, you know, that's what we do. You know, what I found out in this program is that we're all sponsors, we're all sponsees, we're all teachers, we're all students. We all help each other. We're a network. We're a network of NA quilting. I mean, we come together. We make each other strong. We lift each other up. And all we have to do is be ourselves. And that's what I realized, is that I don't know when it happened, but I had my own walk. I'm walking the walk. I'm doing the deal. I'm in service. I'm working steps. I have sponsors, a sponsor. I have a sponsee. I'm in service. I don't go to jail anymore. I have a driver's license. I have a job, you know, I'm walking the freaking walk. And, you know, and for the most part, I am very happy. I'm a very happy person. I am so blessed. I have a God that is so huge that there isn't nothing today that I can't get through. And that's what I found out through this walking the walk. Thank you to the committee for inviting me to be here and ramble on and share my experience, strength, and hope. It's always an honor to participate in what we do here. You know, it doesn't always, you know, have to be. I participate on a daily in Narcotics Anonymous. On a daily. Not on a weekly, not on a whatever. I am busy. I am busy at it, and it's a privilege to do that. And I don't ever want to take it for granted. I don't ever want to feel like it's a chore, you know. One of the things that I realized early on is that the main thing that our responsibility is as members of this fellowship is to be there. Be there. Give that new person acknowledgement. Let them know that you see them, that you love them, and that you know how they feel. And that they too can change their life. All they have to do is a few simple things that we do around here. We get honest and open-minded and willing. We allow someone, doesn't have to be a dozen people, but someone, you have to allow someone to get close to you that you will be honest with. And I am so blessed today that I can be honest with y'all. It doesn't matter who you are. There isn't anything. I have no secrets today. No secrets today. And it's a pretty good thinking feeling. You know what I'm saying? It's a good feeling just to be. You know, I wake up on a daily. I still do all the stinking things that I started doing in the beginning. I still do today. I still get up. And I thank my God, and I pray the same stinking prayers. It's so weird, you know, but they work. If it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, I surrender on a daily basis, and, you know, and when I find myself getting squirrely and I don't want to drive 50 miles, I think, okay, you know, what's going on? You know, I've got flags. I got to know myself well enough to know that I've got to be aware, you know, that we've got the 10th step, that daily 10th step. You know, if I'm not aware of what my day was like, and you know what is so cool is like, I always thought I was a nice person, right? And for the most part, I guess, compared to a lot of other people, I was a nice person, But I found that there were things that I could improve upon, and I'm still working on that. I want to be a kind person today. I want to be a loving person. I want to care genuinely. You know, I was the person who couldn't listen to you when I got here. I would talk over you. I would be over here while you were talking to her, and I would like, what? You know, I was that person. And I'm really, really happy to say that I've gotten so much better at that. When I talk to you, I'm hearing you. I'm looking at you. I see you. And I appreciate that you're giving me some time. I'm old too, you know. Jack says, I'm 64 years old today. And I have been here for 20 years. And I've still got a few more years before I was as many years here as I was out there, you know, and that's okay, because I want to be here when I'm 70, you know, I do, and I, you know, and I have people like Jack and Chris and Ray and Steph, and, you know, I've gotten to know so many, Lynn, and, you know, God has blessed me with so many people. I have a few gals that I sponsor, and they fill my life. They fill my life because I can so relate with them. And they have chosen me to go on their journey with them. And what an honor. What an honor that is. So, you know what? If you're here this weekend, thank my God, okay, because he brought y'all here. That's how I feel about it. You know, my God's in charge of my life, and I want to thank you for being here for me today. Thanks for letting me share.
All righty. Now I'm pleased to introduce Lynn N. M. from Cottonwood, Arizona.
My name is Lynn. I'm an addict. This is the first time I have not overanalyzed what I'm going to say, how I'm going to say it, why I'm going to say it. And it's been interesting because this morning somebody talked about living dirty, being clean. And by doing that, I can't break the chains, which is the second workshop I came to. And I damn sure can't walk any kind of walk. So it's really neat how they go together. And I can tell you that I've been in here a minute, May 4th, 1994, and I've had to break a lot of chains, and I've had to look at areas of my life where I was living dirty, being clean. And I love the idea of the no matter what club and just don't use. But for me to walk the walk, I have to take that a step further. And I have to work on me, because me is what got me here. One of the things that came to me when I looked at the idea of walk the walk is I had to allow myself to have understanding and forgiveness of where I was when I was taught to walk. I was born a fetal alcohol syndrome baby. I was in the hospital multiple times, held back in kindergarten because I missed too much time. I was sent to clergy for my parents' divorce, and things happened with that individual that not supposed to happen to little boys. And that's how I learned how to walk. And then I found these chemicals that allowed me not to have to feel and have to worry about walking because I just existed. And I'm not going to prove my story and tell you I earned my seat, because it doesn't really matter to me if somebody thinks I did or not. I know I earned that, son of a bitch. The legal system says I earned it. My family would tell you I earned it. And I can tell you it started at 10 and I end up in 6-point restraint in the psych ward after being found with a 9mm on my chest laying in a glass coffee table, because that was my solution. And the problem is I kept waking up. You know, and there was good times in my active using, there was bad times, there was rough times, there was absolutely insane times. I got into this idea of recovery, and I couldn't comprehend how you people could do what I did and still be okay with who you are. Now, I work in this field, and I've been in this field a long time. When I got out of detox, 12-week detox, because I was a pretty sick son of a bitch, I had been on the run at a 0.58 alcohol blood level. And I laid there, and the doctor told my mom and dad, you'll never be right again. Because I was in drug-induced psychosis. When I came out of that, you know, some would still tell you I'm not right, but I'm a lot more right than I was. I started volunteering in the field at a psych ward, and I've been in the field ever since. And I got into the field because there are people like me that only people like me can relate to. Because all these people with a lot of letters behind their name, and I have a few now, but all they did is talk out of the book. They put orange juice in their fucking cereal, and they couldn't understand the guy that was laying on that table. They didn't understand the guy sitting behind the dumpster. And then I recently have discovered that it became my identity, because I was pretty good at it. And I've been successful in it. I've moved up in the world. But it also became who I was. And at times I've lost my recovery to the idea that I do this for a living, so I don't have to do it on my own. Or I was known as a crisis worker or this or that. I couldn't go out to dinner with people in the fellowship without somebody telling me about their cousin's sister and can you help them get in detox. I said, do I come to your house after you get off work, talk shit about your job? Can I not just sit here and have coffee? And it got old. And I joke about it, but then it got to the point those that are really close to me understood it got really old, really quick. And I found myself isolating. Allow me to be me. I'm not a crisis worker right now. I'm not a this right now. I'm me. And I'm sorry your family has that shit, but you know what? That's their shit. Allow me to be me. My family is all in active addiction, primarily alcohol. And it makes it very tough. My family's been through a lot lately. My mother has bladder cancer. My stepmother just died from cancer. My father's got heart issues going on. 3 or 4 people have died due to this COVID thing back home. Life has thrown some interesting times. And there are times that my definition of walk the walk have changed. At 14 years clean, I'm living in Mississippi. Make a long story short, I come from a very narrow-minded, white, Anglo-Saxon upbringing. And I never left Mississippi because we didn't leave our neighborhood. I moved 8 times, never left the county. The insanity of what I was taught as a solution. After my parents got divorced, my mother moved 8 times, 3 streets over. Because something's going to change. So I moved to Little Rock, Arkansas, and little redneck white boy is going to run a inner city ministry for the Bloods and Crips. There was a documentary done on HBO called Bangin' in Little Rock. And most of the people that are in that video and most of their children I dealt with. And I did that because I learned that if I give back to this community that I was affiliated with people that did bad things to them, then I can free my soul. That's the insanity of what I was brought up in, that if you just do this, it makes up for that. And no idea, the idea is I didn't know I was wrong when I was growing up. I didn't have the opportunity to learn that there was another way to think. There was a population outside of the white Anglo-Saxon. I didn't know that. And I beat myself up, put myself in shame because I didn't treat people all the same. If you weren't white Anglo-Saxon, you worked for my family. We didn't associate otherwise. I didn't know any different. And I moved away and I worked with these kids and I saw what they went through. And a lot of miracles happened. And I'm proud of that program. It had 32 kids in it when I started. It had over 200 when I left. And I left because after the 4th time of driving those kids home into the hood, I'm the only thing on the bus that's white other than the white wall on the tires. I got shot up for the 4th time. And these dads tell me, you will not get my kids out of this neighborhood. I do not want them to leave this lifestyle. I can tell you 5 of them graduated University of Arkansas and full ride scholarships. Multiple of them are not in prison. And many are. But it was just because somebody took the time to show them there's another way. That was not where I was headed with this. But in walking the walk today, I love what I do. I work in a field that I'm extremely codependent at times. And I can proudly say I don't take credit for the guy that I pull off the streets and send a white picket fence and a dog and a wife and kids. And I don't take credit for the guy that jumped off the Midgley Bridge because I've been a part of both. And if you don't know what the Midgley Bridge is, it's a 400-foot drop-off. And I found 3 of my clients down there in the last 10 years. I don't take credit for either one, just like I don't take credit for my sponsee getting clean. Because if I think I can do something to make them get clean, I'm not displaying a message. I'm displaying my ego and my arrogance. The message is in the literature. The interpretation is my willingness to help guide them to understand that at wherever they're at. And 90% of the time, they help me understand something I didn't understand. And by living that way today, I get to make friendships with people that I don't ordinarily mix. I've been through things in recovery with people that is not what normally happens. I've been through some very serious things with some people in this room. that I've known for 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, that I haven't been through with people I've known for 30 years. Because I don't feel the bond. Because it's the only room that I have one thing in common. And not to everybody. And yes, I'm one of those old school type guys. I relate to the addict that has a life or death issue sitting in here. I don't relate to the court ordered, wife ordered, DCS ordered, probation ordered, candy ass ordered recovery. I relate to the guy that has tried all that and now wants to wake up clean because they want to look in the mirror and see something worth seeing. That's okay brushing their teeth and looking themselves in the eye and doesn't want to pull out a 9mm. Am I perfect? Hell no. Do I have a lot to do? Absolutely. If I understood everything, you know, I have areas of my life that I'm really not good at. Financially, I make good money, but I spend a lot of it. Relationship-wise, I'm single. There's a reason. I have a real good relationship with my work, but I haven't seemed to be able to manage that in my personal life. And the reason is, I found my identity at work. I spent too much time devoted to work. And I'm working on that. You know, I have outside help helping me deal with some of those issues. And I learned things the hard way. I wasn't going to go there, but one of the most powerful things that's happened to me recently is I run a facility. It's only a 12-bed facility, but we only take people that are on access, and we only take people that nobody else will take. We take unmedicated, mentally ill people that are on meth and heroin and all the good drugs, and we take them out of prison and out of jail. They're real happy to see us. And it's my favorite kind of people. And they think I'm crazy as shit. Because I had no problem getting in their face. I had one Friday tell me, you understand this is my yard? I said, no, I will remind you where your yard is. It's a phone call away. This is my yard. You're going to play by my rules. Do you know who the hell I am? Yes. A client in my facility that needs help. And you can let that little boy out anytime you want, or you can play yard. And I will play yard with you until you let that little boy out. Because that's what somebody did for me. Till I learned that I didn't have to prove something to you, and I could be who I was. This was all the show. So one of these individuals ran away. And I went and found him. I'm sitting in the desert waiting for transport. And a drunk driver ran into us in my truck head on. And that 30 seconds of seeing those headlights coming as I'm parked in the desert, like, yeah, that's just my eyes. I'm getting old, like knee cataracts. You know, they're stopping. No, they're going to stop. No, they're slowing down. Motherfucker, they're not. Excuse my French. And God bless that client that was with me. He looked at me and said, can I have a cigarette? I'm like, dude, we just got hit. I'm on speakerphone in my truck with his mother trying to convince him to come back to my facility so I don't have to call his parole officer and violate him because he's facing 17 years for attempted murder. And somebody should not go to prison for walking away from a facility on an attempted murder charge because he's just like I am. Scared. And he has other issues, but all he wanted was a cigarette. I've had 5 back surgeries. I've been in residential psychiatric care for the last 20 years. I've worked at state hospitals. Used to really get off on being on the takedown teams or the politically correct behavioral squad. I don't enjoy that anymore. I have enough metal in my body that it's not worth it. But this individual that hit us, one of us, was trying to leave. And I realized it, and I got out of my truck, and I was like, dude, you need to give me your keys. You're drunk. You're not leaving. About 10 years ago, my nephew drowned because of my family that's in this addiction. Chose to be inside the bar instead of watching my nephew at 3 years old. And I look in the back seat, and I see this precious little three-year-old girl dressed in a princess outfit for Halloween that had just flown around this car, and he's trying to leave. And all the stuff that I have not dealt with that I thought I had came out, and I blacked out. I'll just say that he tried to press assault charges on me because I was getting those keys. I did get those keys. When I say walk the walk, I'm saying that I have to be willing to accept that there's some things in my childhood that I'm obviously not thoroughly okay with yet, because I'm still trying to advocate for that little child. And to get angry, get upset, or be hurt about that stuff is okay. But to get into certain levels of rage, I need to look at some of that stuff and see what's going on there. Because I hardly remember the altercation with me and this individual. When I got to the ED 3 hours later from my top screen, and because my boss told me I had to go, my blood pressure was 220 over 170. Obviously, I was in a lot of pain. I wasn't feeling anything. And I was back at work the next morning, 7 hours later. And I'm not saying that sound good. I'm saying that to say that's part of the walk I have to work on. Because it was more important to get to work to make sure that individual didn't go to prison than it was to take care of me. And when I keep coming to these rooms and I keep hanging around people that are like me, that don't co-sign my bullshit, but they also love me for who I am and not my last name and not what I've done or what my family did or where I'm from, but because I have the same common bond they do, I'm able to walk that walk. Because every other environment I've been in, there's a condition attached to it. And I'm not going to get political. But I think we're doing a disjustice in this room when we get in fear of not talking about what's going on. Because people like us don't deal with what's going on out there and stay clean. And so I understand we don't want to talk about Biden, Trump, COVID, not COVID, overreacting. But what more reason do we need to go out there and say, screw this shit? And we're not. Because I work in a lot of work where we had a 47% suicide increase. Yeah, I'm getting passionate because I watch people in body bags every other day. 48% suicide by overdose. And we're not. We're here. That's why this walk is so critical. I'm going to do something I don't normally do. I know I haven't talked 30 minutes, but I'm going to stop before I start rambling. Thank you all for having me.